WHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Sick outs are mounting, and the Transportation Secretary is warning air traffic controllers to keep working, despite the government shutdown now entering its seventh day. This woman got stuck at the airport in Denver.
We're coming from Nashville, and so we already had like a 2.5 hour flight. That one was delayed, and then this one is further delayed. We just want to go home.
The Supreme Court takes up a Christian counselor's challenge to a Colorado law banning conversion therapy for teenagers. CBS's Jan Crawford.
The Trump administration is supporting the therapist here. She says the law violates her free speech. But Colorado says it's not about speech. States can regulate the practice of health professionals.
A pilot, a nurse, and a paramedic are in critical condition after a medical helicopter crashed on a highway in Mento, California. Fire Chief Justin Sylvia.
The lucky portion for us, I'd say, is the fact that the helicopter did not catch on fire, because then we would have an additional problem.
CBS News. Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. It's harvest season in Wisconsin, and that means more agricultural traffic on the roads. Along with drivers needing to be aware of these slow-moving vehicles, you can help in other ways. If you notice roads that are in need of repair because of agricultural traffic, you can reach out to your local government officials to remind them that now is the time to apply for funding through the State Agriculture Roads Improvement Program, or ARIP. The application period opened on Monday, October 6th, and the deadline for submissions is 5 p.m. on December 15th. Healthcare organizations across Wisconsin are now offering the updated COVID-19 vaccine. As colder weather approaches, people will be spending more time indoors, and respiratory illnesses like COVID-19 are likely to become more common again. Major pharmacy chains have now received the updated vaccine, and now organizations like UW Health are scheduling appointments for residents. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers also recently issued an executive order to ensure the COVID vaccine remains available for all residents and is covered through insurance. Mayor Matt Zacher has proclaimed October as Pedestrian Safety Month and October 15th as White Cane Safety Day in Wisconsin Rapids. This awareness emphasizes the importance of safe and accessible streets, sidewalks, and crosswalks for all individuals, including children, older adults, and individuals with disabilities. White Cane Safety Day on October 15th serves to educate everyone on the significance of the white cane. It's a symbol of independence for those who are blind or visually impaired. Wisconsin law requires drivers to stop before approaching closer than 10 feet to someone using a white cane or service animal to ensure their safety on the roads. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Brewers roll past the Cubs. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers with a 7-3 victory over the Cubs in their best of five playoff series. The Cubs have now lost two in a row. Manager Craig Counsell.
You know, in the first two games, we have just not, you know, produced enough pressure on them. And it's, you know, that's going to add up to a lot of zeros.
Game three tomorrow afternoon, just after 4 o'clock at Wrigley Field. Brewers manager Pat Murphy asked if Quinn Priester will be on the mound.
Do you know what your plans are for game three starting pitcher?
Game three will be Priester.
NBA, the Bucks beat the Heat 103-93 in preseason play. The Packers held practice and wide receiver Christian Watson out there since that ACL injury last January. Does it feel good to be back?
100%. I got to knock a little bit of rust off, obviously. It's been a while since I've been able to, you know, go out there and play football, but from just, you know, confidence and just running and everything, it felt really good.
That's Christian Watson with Sports on Mike Clemens.
97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Get ready for a stretch that will actually feel like fall. Plenty of sunshine for today with high temperatures in the mid-60s. Mostly clear tonight, chilly lows near 30, some widespread frost developing. That frost will hang around early on Wednesday, otherwise sunny with highs near 60. Currently, it's 39.
And welcome back to our True Crime Podcast. Our guest today is Sean Cleary.
Wait, what? We are supposed to be doing a commercial about Cleary's storage, egg, and sports facilities.
Great point, Sean. It was a warm summer evening in 1978 when a young man with a hammer...
Whoa, again, not a true crime podcast. I want to talk about Cleary designing the building of your dreams.
In a world where things aren't what they seem.
Okay, give me that. Good grief. Visit ClearyBuilding.com today and experience the Cleary difference.
From Eau Claire to Green Bay.
Oh, my goodness, a powerful run to the house.
And Milwaukee to Madison.
Under duress, and it's a safety.
The tradition of Badger football lives here.
Touchdown, Wisconsin.
Join us Saturday. It's the Badgers and Hawkeyes at Camp Randall. Our coverage begins at 4.
Now we'll get rolling.
On your home for Wisconsin football.
Looking pressured and sacked.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, comedian Jim Flanagan joins to talk a Wisconsin date. Then a mystery guest drops by. Let's light it up Tuesday style.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. He doesn't have a cowboy hat. He says that he might have boots. I wonder if he has chaps. That's my question. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
You know, I haven't done enough shopping here in the Dallas Metroplex to go looking for chaps. So I've got a little time yet to work on that. Anyway, thank you, Parker Olson, producing things in Madison. I normally say down in Madison, but up in Madison from where we are in Texas this week on the road. But nice to have you along from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network. And coming up this hour, we are minutes away from hearing from Cam Stevenson from Courier Newsroom and the Below the Beltway newsletter. The latest about the government shutdown and more happening in the nation's capital. Then at the bottom of the hour, we will be joined by Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area to talk about state capital matters. Tomorrow on the program, we will have Chuck Collins from Patriotic Millionaires coming in and talking about wealth inequality in this country. And on Thursday, we will have Congressman Mark Pocan joining us to tell us his perspective and the things that he's been doing this week, which includes another round of town halls in the 3rd Congressional District. You may say, but wait, Mark Pocan is not from the 3rd Congressional District. He's in the 2nd Congressional District. That is true. That checks out. But the guy in the 3rd Congressional District, Derek Van Orden, does not feel like hearing from his constituents in a public town hall setting about the government shutdown and the massive cuts to health care that are causing it. So Congressman Pocan is helping provide some representation to the constituents there. And so we'll talk to him more on Thursday morning about what is happening. Be sure you join us then. But for the latest on what is happening in the nation's capital right now, let's head over and visit with Cam Stevenson from Courier Newsroom. He also has the Below the Beltway newsletter that you can subscribe to at beltway.news or head over to couriernewsroom.com to learn much more. Cam, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I am doing all right. You know, it's a little bit slower here the past couple days. We got people on furlough, people worried if they're going to get laid off, and a lot of people just waiting for the government to reopen.
Yeah, and the chatter, I guess you could call it, is that there are plenty of Republicans, members of Congress, who pretty much understand how a lot of us think this is going to end, with eventually restoring some of the cuts either to Medicaid or to Affordable Care Act subsidies or both. And that's the only way that they're going to get Democratic votes, which would end the shutdown. Now, clearly, not every Republican feels like that. And the president certainly is trying to inflict maximum pain in the meantime. But is it just that everybody feels like we're in a holding pattern until people feel like the time is right to actually start negotiating again?
Well, it's almost as if, well, not almost, we are in a forced holding pattern. typically what would happen during this negotiation process, and I'm sure anyone could apply this to their regular life, is that when you're trying to reach a compromise, the way that you do that is you talk with the people you're trying to compromise with and reach an agreement. And normally during, you know, leading up to government shutdown or budget talks, that's what happens. But this time around, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, in order to avoid negotiation and compromise at all costs, he has sent every House Republican back home to their district. And just like Representative Van Orden, like you were talking about, he's instructed them not to hold town halls, not to meet with constituents, not to hold fundraisers, not to do anything. Basically just hole up or hide out in the hopes that Democrats will cave and give Republicans everything they want without making any compromise.
So in other words, vacation. They are getting taxpayer funded vacations this week, which Van Orden is now getting for a third week, along with other Republican members of Congress. And that's really been the main working mode of the Speaker of the House, is to avoid conflicts by sending the members home and doing no work whatsoever. But the other thing that Speaker Johnson is doing that I know people continue to point out on social media, and, you know, my words, not yours, but is just flat out lying about, you know, the cause of the shutdown and also the talking points behind this. Again, clinging to the talking point that the massive cuts to healthcare are somehow only going to affect people who otherwise wouldn't be eligible for healthcare, undocumented immigrants, you know, the super wealthy, things like that. Nothing that's in keeping with what, you know, the Trump Republican mega bill has actually done to the future of healthcare in this country.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing about this lie that they're trying to propagate, is that it's easily disproven, because it's not as if Democrats are asking for universal health care, unfortunately, or anything to change or alter the health care system or laws that we have. It's just to keep the laws that we already had. And anyone who works in healthcare or is associated with it in any form knows who has had access to health insurance, who is covered by federal health laws, and who isn't. And it's not the people that Speaker Johnson and President Trump say it is. And so just making stuff up and hoping that people believe it, it may work for a small percentage of the population who wants to believe it anyway, but most people know that that's not the case, and they just want the healthcare that we were already promised.
Right. I mean, it of course it works to your base. They are your base. They you know, lap this stuff up. But when you're trying to appeal to moderate voters, if you're trying to appeal to moderate voters, you know, inflicting pain through a shutdown doesn't help, nor do what I consider the distractions, like sending troops into the streets of American cities, or maybe playing footsie with martial law is a better way of putting it. And there continue to be these court battles about whether the president can unilaterally send federal troops into places like Oregon and Chicago and elsewhere. What's the latest that people are talking about there in D.C.?
Yeah, well, I mean, people don't like it. They don't like, I mean, the representatives I've talked to in Illinois and Oregon, they and their voters are, you know, it should be obvious, but are very against the idea of active military troops being in their cities and policing civilians. I'm speaking with Representative Maxine Dexter later today, who says that, one, they want to make sure that troops don't come into Portland. It's just like any other city in any other state. You know, things are operating normally. There might be a couple of scuffles here and there, but Portland isn't the war zone that the president of the United States says it is, and they don't need troops there. And his insistence on militarizing our cities is only strengthening their resolve to not compromise. Because when you compromise even on budget stuff, in essence, you're compromising with an administration that's okay sending military against regular citizens.
Yeah, we're talking to Cam Stevenson from Courier Newsroom. He authors the Below the Beltway newsletter. You can sign up for that over at beltway.news or couriernewsroom.com to get all of his latest dispatches from Capitol Hill. You know, when I colored this as a distraction, obviously the one that hasn't been talked about lately would be the Epstein files. But again, I noticed, you know, through social media more so than the broadcast networks, that there are still people that haven't taken their eye off of that ball. That, again, as if we're talking just about moderate voters or swing voters, the more that they know, or the more that they're reminded that somebody is sitting on these files and denying justice for all these victims, you know, it resonates with them. And I don't doubt that the Trump administration is well aware of that as well, doing everything possible that the name Jeffrey Epstein doesn't come up in news coverage. But, you know, other people haven't forgotten.
No. Well, and despite his insistence that everybody forget, the president of the United States hasn't either. And he's instructed his, I guess, acolytes, his sycophants in Congress, to avoid anything related to Epstein at all costs, which is pretty infuriating with everyone who isn't implicated in the Epstein files, which is almost everyone except for the rich and powerful. And it's even gotten to the extent where certain members of Congress, mostly Democratic members, have made headway. They've been able to get access to certain documents, certain financial records. I've been following the financial records of Jeffrey Epstein that the Treasury holds, and they were finally able to give these records to an oversight committee in Congress, the House Oversight Committee. Just hours after the House received them, Speaker Johnson shut down the House, told everyone to go home, and left town, stopping that investigation in its tracks until the House reopens, and also denying an elected member of Congress their seat. Adelita Grijalva in Arizona, she was elected in mid-September in a special election. And because the House left, they have not seated her. And she, one, is duly elected, and two, is a pivotal vote in releasing some of these records to the public.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. We have not discussed that at all, that since she won that special election in Arizona, that Speaker Johnson has refused to, you know, have her sworn in. She would represent the 218th vote for a discharge petition to release the Epstein files. And again, if this were a Republican winning a special election, you would not see this kind of a delay. Speaking of delays, we talked a little bit ago about Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy talking about how air travel is probably going to start to see some delays. Air traffic controllers, TSA workers, they're not getting paid. They're still expected to work. It was those mounting air delays that actually put pressure on Trump to, you know, end the government shutdown from back in 2018. I have a feeling the chatter is the same out there this time around, that it might be the real impact of travel delays that helps force the hand of people in Washington.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, air traffic controllers, people who are federally required to be on their job, are in one of the most stressful positions that you can have. It's a really, you know, it's a tough job. It's a lot of stress. It's hard when you're getting paid. But when you add on to that the fact that people in a couple weeks aren't going to get their paycheck, they're going to have to choose what bills they can pay, they may have to skip on meals. You know, I mean, I know me personally, I can only last so long without a paycheck. I think that kind of goes across the board. And when people in these stressful positions who control our travel are going to hit that point is right around the holidays. You know, Thanksgiving's just around the corner, and with them out of their job or having to take sick days or take time off, that's going to severely reduce everyone's ability to travel. So, you know, people aren't going to get home to see their families. You know, military aren't going to be able to travel back as easily. It's just going to kind of be a mess.
It is, but the shutdown does give Cam Stevenson more time to catch up on his Bad Bunny and Taylor Swift listening. And in between all of that, he writes Below the Beltway. Head over to couriernewsroom.com or beltway.news to learn more. Cam, always appreciate the weekly updates. Thank you very much. Hope you have a great day.
Thank you. You too, Pat. Enjoy Texas.
Thank you very much. Trying to do just that. And we'll be talking tomorrow in our homeroom segment about Texas education and the explosive growth of taxpayer-supported vouchers. Cam and I have talked about that previously from an Arizona standpoint and how to stem that before it blows up the Wisconsin state budget as well. All right, Dan Schaefer coming up in about 15 minutes here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north. Even when I'm not.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You've probably heard about investors who got in on the ground floor of a company that grew to be a huge success. But successful investing isn't about luck or genius. Instead, it's about building durability. Here are some suggestions. First, think long term. Most investors make their money over time, not overnight. You'll want a well-diversified portfolio of quality investments and plan to own them for the long term. Next, invest in quality. For stocks, quality is often measured by the steadiness of earnings and dividend growth over time. For bonds, one measure is an investment-grade credit rating with a relatively low risk of default. And finally, build a long-term strategy to provide a roadmap for your investment choices. You may want to make changes periodically, but do it for the right reasons, like changing goals or tolerance for risk.
This content was provided by Edward Jones for use by Clay Kanopi, your Wisconsin Rapids Edward Jones financial advisor at 715-421-0958.
Hey, Mom, can I go out with my friends?
You're getting sick again? You need to stay home and rest.
Okay.
I know I can't get sick again.
No!
Oh, what? Oh, it was only a dream. I'm heading to Family Natural Foods first thing in the morning.
Family Natural Foods is there for your family with elderberry immune support from Terry Naturally. Protect yourself and don't miss another day with help from Family Natural Foods, West Grand Avenue in Wisconsin Rapids.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, and now for something local from WFHR and WIRI Studios.
Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Rapids Report for this Monday, October 6, 2025. You have your host, James, here. I want to send a big shout-out to Crockett Septic. Big thank you to them for sponsoring the show. And a gigantic thank you to the Miss Wisconsin Rapids Teen and Miss Wisconsin Rapids competitions. People that have been talking with us and been working with us to be able to get all these great contestants on the air with us. Today, we have two more contestants for the Miss Wisconsin Rapids Teen competition. I'll let you introduce yourself so the audience can put a voice to the name.
Hi, everyone. My name is Isabel St. Myers. I'm 16 years old, and I'm a junior at Lincoln High School.
Thanks for being here, Isabel.
Hi, I'm Gianna Peters. I'm 16 years old and a junior at Assumption High School.
Gianna, thank you for being here as well. Good to have you guys back in studio again. And this is old hat for you. You've done this before, so you know how many silly questions I'm going to ask and what I'll do. But I would like to start off letting the audience get to know you a little. Can you tell us a little about yourself? What grade you're in and why you entered the competition?
I'm a junior at Lincoln High School, and I entered the competition because I was always a little cranberry cutie, and I looked up to so many of these young women, and I wanted to be that young woman in my community.
I started competing because I used to have a really low self-esteem, but learning about Ruby's experience and how many friendships that she's made has really inspired me to also want to compete and make the same friendships.
Great stuff. Thank you both for that. What are the benefits of being a part of the competition that you have found, Isabel?
Friendships are the first thing that I would say. You create so many amazing friendships with the young women that are a part of this program. And you're learning skills that you use on an everyday schedule, like interview and questions, and really just getting more confident in yourself.
And Gianna?
Yeah, I think friendship's the big thing. A lot of skills and also scholarships that will help with whatever you choose to do in your future. So it's just a lot of building up that you can use in your future.
Hmm. As far as the talent portion of the competition, what will you be doing for your talent portion?
I'll be doing a jazz piece, a jazz dance piece, to the song Fire in My Soul because it connects to my CSI and it's just uplifting. I've been dancing since I was 3, so it's always been my passion.
A big fan of that style of jazz, that style of dance too. That's really cool to hear. Awesome.
I'll be singing One Perfect Moment from the Broadway musical Bring It On. I love singing. I started singing after my mom was in a ton of musicals, and I've just kind of followed her footsteps in being a performer.
Great song, and that's going to sound good, I bet. Oh, that's very cool. Nicely done. Now, we know that one of the, from talking to a number of the contestants, one of the more important things is your CSI, your Community Service Initiative. What is your Community Service Initiative, Isabel?
My Community Service Initiative is Ignite Awareness, Fire Safety and Prevention, and it focuses on really just knowing fire safety skills and the things that are going to help you if you get into a fire or a situation like that.
And Isabel, is this one important to you? Something for a reason or just one that you thought needed attention?
Yeah, I feel like it needs attention in our community. And my dad is a firefighter paramedic, so it hits close to home to talk about this subject.
Well, and especially with that, you know a little bit more of what you're talking about than your average kid. So that's you're a great source for that. And agreed, a great topic to bring up. Yeah, Gianna?
My community service initiative is Feeding Our Future, promoting food accessibility. I started being a voice for those who faced hunger after learning my grandma's story. She grew up not really knowing what was going to be on the table. And then she started working at the neighborhood table, and I went with her one time, and I was just so happy to be there. And I love volunteering and just doing the best that I can for the community that raised me.
Very well said. And it's a great note, to not just to kids out there, but to us adults and everything. I was very similar. I was a little kid when my mom had me at a soup kitchen and handing out soup and everything. And to this day, it's one of my important causes to me is hunger and taking care of that. As adults, we get people, young kids interested in these things, and they take the ball and they run with it. It's a great note on that. What about what you're looking forward to as far as the competition goes? You don't have to pick just one thing or anything in general, but maybe just the idea of the event itself. But what is something that you're looking forward to about the event, Isabel?
I'm really looking forward to Tech Week. It's always my favorite because it's pretty much the show without all the pressure being on you. So we get to have fun, we eat snacks, and it's really just a good time.
I think Tech Week is like the best because we all form a good relationship during our rehearsals, but I think Tech Week, we all just get so much closer. And I'm also really excited for the interview phase of the competition and being able to talk to judges and just get them to know the true me.
Yeah, great answers, you two. Great stuff. And, you know, I will say that you have already grown just from last time you were here to now and stuff, and seeing that is so awesome. It never gets old. But it's also encouraging, I think, to anybody out there listening and saying that maybe, you know, they're a parent of somebody that wants to be a part of the competition. Maybe they've thought about it, but they just haven't jumped all in yet. So if there's a young girl out there listening and they came to you and asked, you know, why should I be a part of this? Or what would you say to them to encourage them to be a part of this great competition?
I would say absolutely be a part of this organization. There are so many amazing things and amazing role models throughout this entire program, and it's really just a fun time, and you won't have any regrets because you're learning skills that will take you throughout your life.
I would say there's nothing to lose. There's always something that you will gain, whether it's friendships, scholarships, skills, and just having a great time. I've seen so many improvements over the years of people competing and improvements in the newer girls who were kind of unsure at first, but I've just seen them flourish into wonderful young women since then.
I've been really spoiled in this job. I've gotten to, for 9 years, interview contestants and see a lot of what you are talking about there. And when it comes to that, It's slight at times, and you don't notice it that well, but I do. I pick up on it because I see such a vast difference, and it's probably been a year since the last time I saw some of you and everything. And it's just night and day the way that it does. I don't want to skate past the pageant, scholarship money that is vitally important and certainly a great help and very much appreciated about the competition. The friendships and the fellowships that can be made, there's just not enough for that in life. And as my mom is screaming in the back of my head, more and more opportunities for women to support women. That's always a positive, always a great thing. But that part of that you mentioned there about the confidence. I bring this up a lot, and for a reason, because there's whatever you two go on to do.
You were listening to the Rapids Report, sponsored by Crockett Septic. To hear the full interview, visit WFHR.com, the Civic Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. The cranberry harvest is well underway across Wisconsin, and we've led the nation in cranberry production for the past 30 years. But this year, growers in the state are projected to produce 5.3 million barrels, which is less than the 2024 harvest of 6 million barrels. Grant Hawley is the executive director of the Wisconsin Cranberry Growers Association. He says cranberry research has changed focus a bit over the past year and a half.
Our researchers, seeing the handwriting on the wall and seeing how temperatures, the climate, not the weather, the climate is ticking its way up, they started to move those research pieces over to heat tolerances.
With the shortened season, growers are looking at an average year of production. This year was likely on the border of what the fruit can tolerate in terms of heat and humidity for prolonged periods. Holly said if this is the average climate we can expect going forward, cranberry growers will probably be okay.
If that degree keeps ticking a little bit higher and we keep getting warmer and more humidity, then we need to start to worry.
And what Holly said would cause the worry are bugs and pests cranberry crops haven't had to worry about before.
Are the cranberries going to be fine? They are. They grew up here. They're made for Wisconsin. They're not going to go extinct.
But Holly said these changes to the cranberry climate could cause a drop-off in plant production. Researchers are working to mitigate that as much as possible. But even with these challenges, Holly said Wisconsin isn't likely to lose the cranberry crown anytime soon.
We are producing about 67% of the nation's cranberries, a little over half of the world's cranberries. Are things going to get a little bit leaner? Yeah, they are. But we're not going to lose that title. Wisconsin's still going to be the home of the cranberry.
I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. It's been said that nothing good happens after midnight, even when something might seem harmless, like doing wind sprints behind a bar at 12:30 a.m. Former Jets quarterback and Fox News analyst Mark Sanchez was doing just that after several drinks, apparently, early Saturday morning. It led to a physical altercation with a much older man, which is still under investigation. It was first reported that Sanchez was in critical condition with stab wounds, but now it's come out that he might have been the instigator of the incident that involved a 69-year-old grease truck driver. According to security tapes, both men, despite getting physical, were trying to record each other with their phones. Authorities say Sanchez body slammed the man to the ground and beat him up a bit before being stabbed two or three times, at which point Sanchez ran off. Mark Sanchez was arrested while recovering in the hospital, but has since been released. More details are sure to follow with this strange incident. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Get ready for a stretch that will actually feel like fall. Plenty of sunshine for today with high temperatures in the mid-60s. Mostly clear tonight, chilly lows near 30, some widespread frost developing. That frost will hang around early on Wednesday, otherwise sunny with highs near 60. Currently, it's 39.
You wanted to be cool, which led you to smoking, which led to a pack a day. Then you met that special someone, which led to starting a life with them, which led to wanting to live longer, which led to quitting. Then you heard you may be at risk for lung cancer, which led you to getting a low-dose CT scan. If you smoked, get scanned. Talk to your doctor and learn more at savedbythescan.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
I'll trust water bottles and a flashlight to save the day, but I'll be proved wrong.
With a tornado approaching, I'll realize that I lack a wheelchair-accessible shelter.
When the floodwaters rise, I'll be up in the attic with 20 cans of beans. It's a recipe for disaster.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Homeless veterans are facing a crisis in Chippewa Falls, and Brittany Carlone from Wisconsin Watch will be here to tell us a solution on the horizon and the Brewers results and more. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
All right, this is first and foremost a radio show, and we appreciate everybody who listens across the Civic Media Radio Network. But of course, you can catch us as a podcast. Head over to Spotify and follow the show, or Apple, wherever you get your podcast. But we are also a video product, at least for folks who watch us on YouTube or Facebook. And that would include people like Tony, who sends in a note on YouTube. Pat, why did you move the logo to the top left? It covers your face in the three-person view. And he's absolutely right. I moved that the other day, and I forgot to move it back. So for the video audience, I'm going to press this little button here, and boom, there it is. Back where it, I know. Did that scare you a little bit?
A little bit. I know. Yeah, well, you've moved fast.
The magic of computers and video and everything. But let's say we get back to making this a radio show. And Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area and Civic Media's political editor joins us now. Dan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. Doing well. Always wonderful to join you here on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Also, you know, feeling good today after a Brewers win.
You have to be. Absolutely. I mean, I noted that on Saturday, you know, we went down by a home run in the top of the first, and Sherry said to me, don't worry. They always feel like they have to come back from behind. They have to be chasing something. Last night, 3-run home run in the top of the first. And again, Sherry's like, not worried. They need to chase something. Sure enough, they did. You know, they chased it down with a 3-run homer in the bottom of the first inning from Andrew Vaughn. It only got more exciting from there. It's great to see Jackson Churio not be as banged up as we all feared that he would be. So it was just
not banged up, delivering that 3-run homer to dead center. That was incredible.
Which he didn't wait too late to do. He did it where I could go to bed at a decent hour and go, all right, we're good. If we screw this up, I don't want to see it. So I would be asleep and just looking at my phone at 4 a.m. It was nice to look at my phone at 4 a.m. and see that, you know, everything held just fine. So we've got game 3 and the potential for a sweep tomorrow afternoon at Wrigley Field. And I'll say again, Dan, I do not get tired of the cutaways to Craig Counsell in the dugout.
Oh, those are real fun, aren't they? They are real fun.
They are nice. Look, before we get to the politics as well, you are also the chief Bucks fan of the Civic Media Radio Network. And the exhibition season starting here?
Yeah, they had their first preseason game last night.
Oh, it was last night. All right.
Yeah. So okay. I didn't catch that one because I was a little focused on the Brewers. But
yes.
They had their first game against Miami last night. So we are not far away from Bucks basketball. It always creeps up on you because October is such a busy sports month with the baseball playoffs, with NFL, football, college football, everything else. Like all of a sudden it's like, whoa, we've got basketball in a couple of weeks here. Yeah.
Well, I mean, for some people, I've seen so many season opener NBA commercials over the past week, and in every one of them, I kind of have the same feeling like, yeah, I'll catch you in March. Okay. Yep. When March Madness hits, you know, but fans like you, they're there all the time and they need you. God love you for it, because those are the ones where when they miss the playoffs by like one game, you'll be the one that points to a game in October and go, see, that's where you messed up.
That's right. If, you know, I'll be complaining about that one loss in Charlotte in November or whatever it is.
Exactly. You know? Well, turning to politics here, I opened up the show early this morning talking about three different instances where they fall under the umbrella of people attacking free and fair elections in this country.
You have a group of eight Republicans in the state assembly introducing a new bill that would get rid of absentee ballot drop boxes, just get rid of the drop boxes altogether. And they were echoing some of the same, you know, mistaken talking points of Donald Trump. You have a Waukesha County judge that's telling the Wisconsin Elections Commission they have to go through this massive change to check citizenship status on 3.8 million voters. And you have Ron Johnson whining that he's discovered that the FBI was looking at his phone records in and around the time that he was trying to undermine the 2000 election. And Dan, I throw all three of those at you to take your pick. But again, just to put the umbrella out there, that it still strikes me as so odd that there is a political party, a political class in this country that wants to make it harder to vote, I guess because they can't win on their ideas. But it just, I just can't believe the way they just keep coming back and attacking elections.
Well, yeah, you're right to point that out. And when you zoom out and you see that all of these different things that Republicans are doing to attack legal voting, to limit legal voting, you know, this is just not a normal practice from a mainstream political party in a democracy. You know, we should want more people participating in the process. We should want more people to have different options for voting. You know, I think a big reason to have ballot drop boxes is so people who, you know, might people with disabilities, older folks, just give more options for people to be able to participate in the democratic process. And I think so many of the so much of what Republicans have done on this over the years have just really been driven by conspiracy. And even going back to, you know, the voter ID push from a decade ago, like that might be a little bit more common practice now, but it was never rooted in any actual data saying that there was anything nefarious going on with elections. Same thing with drop boxes now. Same thing with all of the nonsense about, you know, finding undocumented immigrants on the voter rolls or what have you. So much of this is just absolute nonsense. But it has really been, you know, a cornerstone policy for the Republican Party in so many different ways. And we're seeing that play out over and over again. And I think in Wisconsin, you know, we talked to, I think it was last week, or, you know, we've talked on various shows across the Civic Media Network about these pushes from, you know, in part from State Representative Scott Krug, who was part of the elections committee, to find some sort of pathway forward to, you know, allow for the early count for absentee ballots to be counted in time, and also to have some sort of measures on drop boxes. I didn't really agree with what he was doing. But then you have the rest of his caucus saying, coming out and not just saying that we should, you know, add different security measures to drop boxes or what have you that he proposed. They're saying, yeah, we just want to get rid of these entirely. And you know, I guess that's the challenge. If you're a Republican wanting to get things done on election matters these days, you have to deal with this wing of your party that has been kind of overtaken by these election integrity conspiracy theorists.
Yes. And to do that, you have to keep in mind that there was before Trump and after Trump. Now, after Trump is where you get the Dropbox issue. Prior to Trump using that as a crutch to, you know, protest the election results of 2020, Republicans, as much as Democrats, were supportive of drop boxes and of mail-in absentee voting. Before Trump, their main boogeyman was voter ID. And now you've got this judge in Waukesha County kind of reinforcing this notion that we need to check citizenship status. Again, even though there is no information, no evidence of any kind of massive voting by undocumented immigrants, because why would they risk deportation, you know, for getting caught? So in my mind, and this is simply my opinion, that this is very thinly veiled, you know, racial profiling that you want. If you want voter ID, if you're all antsy to check citizen status when there is no problem with it. So, you know, that was the before Trump status. Now you've got the after Trump where we're buying into the drop boxes. And then the part that's right there in the juicy middle, the 2020 attempt to undermine the election, is where you've got Ron Johnson now saying, I was being surveilled for being a Republican. No, you weren't. You were being surveilled because you were entertaining every kind of conspiracy theory. And as it turns out, you were this close to being a mule for fake electors' ballots. If only Mike Pence had gone along with the thing. All three are disingenuous to some degree or another, Dan. There's just nothing. There's no there.
You're absolutely right. And I think the lack of accountability about 2020, about coming after the folks who fueled the insurrection and tried to overturn the election. The lack of accountability for that is I still think is opening doors for many of these same Republicans to, you know, fuel these types of this type of nonsense. It very much is fueling what Ron Johnson is going after right now. But I think there is another aspect of this that is a little bit unexplored, which is that, you know, as we saw in the last election, the low propensity voters, so people who don't necessarily vote in every election, might not vote in the midterms or local elections and what have you, might only vote in the presidential election. Those voters swung really significantly towards Trump in the last election. So Republicans are now, you know, if for so long it was Democrats who had done better with these lower propensity voters, and it was all about, you know, trying to drive turnout and get more people to the polls, because if you get more people to the polls, typically they would vote Democratic. Well, now that has shifted. So I do wonder if some of these like attacks on legal voting, these limits on legal voting, are going to have a detrimental impact on Republicans, that on their own voters, because you're going to have people in situations who, you know, might not be registered, might not have the right voter ID, might not have the right documents to get in place to vote in time. And these people who might not vote in every election might only show up for certain things. They might not be have the same opportunity to show up and vote if you're continuing to limit legal options for people as well. I think some of the high turnout that we saw, you know, connected to drop boxes, connected to having many different options to vote, that allowed more people to vote, and that many of those people did vote Republican. So I think that it's also a misunderstanding. And I think, you know, a decade ago when Republicans were going after various things to try and limit legal voting, Republicans were winning those lower turnout elections. Now Democrats are dominating in those lower turnout elections. And so I think Republicans might see some results from this and give themselves some pause and say, hey, wait a minute, we are blocking our own voters from going to the polls here by doing these limitations on legal voting. And so I think that's a factor to consider that we don't always talk about as much, because I do think it matters with this political realignment that we're seeing.
Yeah, we're talking to Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's political editor, founder of The Recombobulation Area. You can get his newsletter by signing up at therecombobulationarea.news. It just seems, Dan, that for a party that used to always love to talk about getting rid of red tape, we always heard the term red tape or bureaucracy or whatever you want to call it, you know, over-regulation. But it appears that they have now learned to, you know, become the purveyors of that. In other words, we're not talking about Medicaid cuts so much as you're putting all this red tape, extra red tape in front of people so that they're less likely to see if they qualify for Medicaid. Similarly, whether it's voter ID or having to put 24-hour webcams on a Dropbox and stream it through a municipal website. Again, they're not saying, well, some are saying get rid of them entirely, but a lot of them are just figuring out, how do you put these barriers in place so that people don't do it? And we go, we didn't cut it. We just were trying to keep things, you know, only the people who belong there, when it's really, again, disingenuous to claim that.
You're right. They have really kind of wanted to bolster they always talk about going after the administrative state. You know, Republicans will talk about, like you talked about the red tape, they talk about going after the administrative state and wanting to gut that. Well, but they're doing the opposite and creating administrative burdens for whether it's Medicaid, whether it's SNAP, whether it's the Affordable Care Act, creating all sorts of extra burdens, extra hurdles for people to go over, so that only people who, I guess, are good at paperwork are going to be getting health benefits or getting food assistance or whatever it might be. And I think, you know, we're seeing the same thing with elections. You're just creating extra hurdles for people. And, you know, we should really be working to go in the opposite direction. I think, you know, Democrats should be putting out election packages of their own that makes it easier for people to vote, makes automatic voter registration, takes, you know, different steps to bring more people into the process. And I think that's what we need to be doing.
When we come back, we'll talk to Dan more about Tom Tiffany and scrubbing some stuff from his personal website. What's up with that for the new candidate for governor? We'll discuss that with Dan Schaefer and talk about the government shutdown as well. On the other side, I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
The soul of the West lives on in every pair of handcrafted cowboy boots. At Boot Barn, we're proud to carry a heritage brand that's been preserving tradition and honing their craft since 1879. Made with techniques passed down from father to son, Justin boots stand for quality, comfort, and timelessness. With roots going back over 100 years, they're more than a bootmaker. They're a Western legacy. Justin boots at Boot Barn.
Life insurance. Why are you putting it off? Can't afford it? Too much hassle? Think you don't need it? There's lots of excuses for putting off life insurance. But if you weren't there, who would pay the mortgage and other bills? With Ethos, you could be covered in 10 minutes and boom, family protected. Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as a dollar a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at ethos.com/music. That's ethos.com/music.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In recent weeks, the level of activity from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, has increased quite a bit. There was a raid in Manitowoc at a Walmart parking lot where dairy workers were known to congregate, a series of arrests in Madison, and in Milwaukee, ICE is looking to expand its operations significantly by seeking office space downtown to go along with a new field office on the city's northwest side. This has been concerning for many, and not without reason. A recent large-scale ICE raid in an apartment building in Chicago saw reports of armed federal agents breaking down doors, U.S. citizens detained for hours on end, and children being dragged from their homes in the middle of the night. While the American immigration system has a host of problems, this kind of violent show of force is not an acceptable way to address these problems. And ICE also just received an injection of $45 billion in the One Big Beautiful Bill, so it is imperative for all of us to hold ICE accountable and speak out when things go too far. Right now, things are going way too far.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
Does a 2025 federal law cut funding for some emergency broadcast alerts? Yes. A law signed by President Donald Trump on July 24th rescinds $9 billion, including $1.1 billion from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB. CPB, which funds NPR, PBS, and affiliates, announced it would shut down. Smaller rural stations rely heavily on CPB for weather and emergency alerts. Wisconsin stations got $8.5 million in 2024. The cuts led to a back and forth between Representative Derek Van Orden and Senator Tammy Baldwin on X over whether emergency broadcast alerts would be affected. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Back now with Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, and to correct the record from the last segment, Tony puts up on YouTube, are you trying to start a fight with Luke about who is the bigger Bucks fan? No, I'm not trying to start a fight like that at all. It's clear that it's Dan. There's really nothing to fight about. But if Luke wants to, I mean, Luke wears the biggest Bucks cap that I've ever seen with that bill, you know, that you can land a Harrier jet on top of. But, I mean, he is a fan, Dan. He's just not a Dan Schaefer level fan, I would argue.
Maybe if he lived in Milwaukee, it would be different.
Oh,
I think you got to live in Milwaukee, right?
Yeah. There we go. Residency clause. I like that.
That's
all right. All right, Mathers, game on. We're talking to Dan Schaefer about not just fandom, but things that are happening in the political realm as well. We never talk about appeals court judge races in the state. But you're going to have to get used to that because we've got one who's retiring, Lisa Neubauer, a former candidate for state Supreme Court. We've got Maria Lazar, who is running for Supreme Court as a conservative. You have Chris Taylor, appeals court judge, running, former Democratic assembly rep, so running from the liberal end of things. And frankly, Dan, if you think state Supreme Court races have gotten political, and they most certainly have, then it doesn't take much to predict that, yeah, we've got a big state Supreme Court race in April of next year, but our state appeals court races are getting increasingly political. I would point to Maria Lazar, who knocked off an incumbent when she ran for appeals court. funded by some very, you know, high dollar right wing groups.
That's right. And now she's running for Wisconsin Supreme Court, and she's kind of using this language where she's saying, you know, she wants to be nonpartisan, wants to, you know, doesn't want to bring an ideological bent to the court or anything like that. But it's just like one look at her background in any capacity. You know, she was part of the, you know, Walker team, it's Department of Justice. She was, you know, ran this campaign that she did a couple of years ago. So why try to run a campaign for state Supreme Court that is completely different from everything that's been in your record as a judge so far? But I think, you know, we've seen some interesting, you know, she launched her campaign last week. And I think we're already seeing, you know, some of the movement that from that as well. The Wisconsin Democratic Party officially endorsed Chris Taylor in a press release yesterday. So that's obviously going to, you know, kind of mirror what we've seen in the last couple state Supreme Court elections, where the state Democratic Party really gets behind a certain candidate, as we saw with Janet Protasiewicz in 2023, as we saw with Susan Crawford earlier this year. And now we're going it looks like we're going to be seeing a similar playbook unfold here with Chris Taylor, too. So if it is Chris Taylor against Maria Lazar, considering that Taylor has a big war chest behind her with the fundraising that she's been able to do since she entered the race, I believe it was May or June after the April spring election. And then Lazar just announcing now after Rebecca Bradley kind of surprised some folks by saying that she was not going to run for another 10-year term. I think you got to think the liberal candidate here is the favorite going into that spring election next year.
Well, especially when you consider that the progressive or the Democratic candidate has won like 15 out of the last 18 statewide elections, which takes me to your point about Judge Lazar essentially trying to claim to be the independent. Why don't you just run on who you are and what you have historically been? That takes us to the Dan Bice story this morning out of the Journal Sentinel about Congressman and former state senator Tom Tiffany from up in the Minocqua area, essentially scrubbing his personal website, TomTiffany.com, from references about, you know, his fight against women's reproductive health rights, his you know, stances on gun safety and all sorts of other things. And you saw him try to have it, you know, both ways on the abortion issue in terms of an abortion ban when questioned when he first got into this race for governor. So I guess for me, Dan, maybe for you as well, it's not the world's biggest surprise that at the moment conservatives are not in a hurry to show, you know, the extreme sides of their positions when they're running for statewide office.
Oh, you know, that's certainly part of it. But maybe Tom Tiffany just wants a little bit of a digital reset, you know, wants a doesn't want any, maybe he's scrubbing all of his different social media platforms from anything in the past. Maybe he needed to learn something from what happened with Bill Berrien and his campaign as well. So maybe he's just trying to make sure everything's taken care of and cleaned up before he really, you know, becomes the emerges as the front runner in this race, which it does seem like that's what's happening. We saw a poll over the weekend, too, that showed Tiffany way out front of the Republican field, even with some, you know, people who are have some statewide recognition like Tim Michaels and Eric Hovde also in the poll. But you know, I think this is just what campaigns do now. They've got to make sure, you know, all of their different websites are cleaned up, and especially with Tiffany, like he's not going to be able to hide his record on these types of things, on abortion rights, on gun rights, on these issues that, you know, a number of Wisconsin Republicans during their time, you know, in the state Senate, in state assembly, have been on the wrong side of a lot of 80-20 issues under Robin DeVos's leadership, under the legislative Republican leadership over the past few years. So, you know, he's not going to be able to run from that. But, you know, maybe his campaign has a little things a little bit more in order than Mr. Berrien's did.
I guess maybe start closer to the center but before you make that drift off to the right. And then finally, in terms of the government shutdown, it seems like the most visible, the most vocal part of it is Congressman Mark Pocan, who will be on this show on Thursday morning and going to do some more events in Congressman Derek Van Orden's 3rd District, since Congressman Van Orden isn't doing those kinds of things. Is there anything else that's topping that in terms of, you know, talking about the shutdown, or is that really kind of the proxy for what's happening in D.C.?
I think it is, and I think this issue over the Affordable Care Act tax credits, I'm starting to see some real traction with this from Democrats here. I think they have a winning issue on this, that, you know, the polling is on their side. I even saw Marjorie Taylor Greene tweet something yesterday in favor of the ACA tax credits. And I think if you've got even Republican members saying like, hey, this is going to be really bad for people in my district, might be worth holding out to get a win here.
Might be.
And then if, you know, if Republicans go the other way, if they don't approve them, then, well, got an issue to run on.
That's right. Sign up for Dan's newsletter at therecombobulationarea.news. And of course, all he does is political editor for Civic Media at civicmedia.us. Dan, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Pat. Be well.
All right. And thanks to all of you for joining us here today as well. We will be talking about what we can learn from here in Texas about the rapid explosive growth of the voucher school program and how to prevent that kind of disaster in Wisconsin. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Israelis mourning the 2-year mark of the Hamas attack that triggered the war in Gaza.
It would be absolutely wonderful if the hostages come home in the next week.
Hamas is calling October 7th a historic response to Israel's actions. Day 7 of the government shutdown, and a CBS News data analysis finds staffing at air traffic control facilities at their lowest levels since the post-COVID summer of 2022. CBS's Chris Van Cleve at the airport in Denver.
This is not normal. It is not normal to see staffing levels, staffing triggers, as we have seen here.
As more Democratic cities and states try to put up legal roadblocks, President Trump says he'd consider using the Insurrection Act to send in federal troops.
We're going
to
make Chicago really great again, and we're going to stop this crime. Then we're going to go to another one, and we're going to go city by city. We're going to have